Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, I am with the man of the future, although some people might say he's the man of now, Max Ajomo. Max, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, mate. Yourself?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you. So, let me get this right. We are recording at, what, 2:30? You've just come from a speed session.
There's a very good coach in Bath, Al Murdoch, who runs Speedworks. He's partnered with Jonah, who's up in Loughborough, and I think in the off season, just to keep ticking over, a lot of boys think this is the chance you can get quicker because speed kills, really.
Yeah, it does. Now that's a weird one because you said speed work, and it didn't throw me because, of course, you pros are working on everything all the time. I never really think of you as a particularly fast player, and not because you're not fast, but because I'm always thinking about your ball skills, the kicking, the passing, the range of passing. I don't really see you run that much. So, what are you like as an athlete? Do you particularly rate yourself?
I'm quite quick off the mark. Like, my top speed's not great, but in terms of like the first 10 meters, yeah, it's good. I really want to almost like take JJ's role, if you feel me.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't do it as much now because he plays more as a playmaker, but back in the day he would just stand someone up and go around the outside of them.
Yeah,
and I just feel like as a player, if you can be, you know, undefendable in, you know, the three facets, like kick, run, pass, like how do you defend someone?
Mate, you're absolutely right. And I'm so glad you brought up JJ because I've been saying this for ages. I think he's changed the way he plays. I saw him, like, when I first saw JJ, he was playing for London Irish against Sale and he just destroyed people on the outside. And now you watch him and he can basically do an impression of you, or he can do an impression of Cam Redpath, but he does still have that danger as well on the outside.
Yeah, without a doubt. But that, you know, shows what a great player he is because, you know, the longevity of his career, you know, you're not going to be quick your whole time.
No.
And JJ's still quick, but, you know, to stand someone up and take them on the outside, you're talking, you know, Zamit pace, really.
Yeah, so completely agree.
You have to have that. You know, if I can ball play now, you'll always be able to ball play. So that's what I'm always trying to work on, because that really allows you to play into your 30s.
Yeah, I completely agree. Being a great athlete is, it's nice when you can do it, but I also think it sort of limits you, because I think there's so many lads out there who started as great athletes, and because they are so great at, say, running or just being strong, they kind of neglect the rest of their game, and they do run out of steam when they come 29, 30. I mean, I remember Pierre Spiess, who was meant to be the ultimate, wasn't a very good rugby player, actually. He's just a very good athlete.
Yeah, and that, you see that a lot with, especially with people that have been huge. The easiest one is kids that were massive. You know,
yeah,
they were unreal when they were 18. And then you go into the pro game and, you know, everyone's big. Like, you've always got someone bigger than you. So, you know, it's almost on the school coaches, the academy coaches, to make sure people are well-rounded so that they can find their niche once they're into the pro game.
So, I mean, everyone knows, I guess everybody knows you as son of Steve, although I imagine soon that will change and everyone will know Steve as father of Max. But, like, what is your route into the game? Obviously, your dad played. Where were you playing before you were at Bath?
I've always been in Bath. Genuine. I grew up here. I played touch rugby I played, like, minis for Bath RFC, and then went to Chippenham from under 12s onwards, and then it was the classic county ACAD into the system.
Oh, right. So have you played much, I call it club rugby, anything which isn't pro I call club. So have you played much in, like, the lower leagues at all? Have you always just been in the academy system?
No, so I decided to go to uni. So I'm at Uni of Bath. So for my first year, I think I played like 5 Bucks games.
Impossibly, have you?
Impossibly hard, mate.
Wow. Like,
what? I don't know why, but it was the hardest rugby I've played.
So are you playing in the Wednesday teams?
I was, yeah. So for first year I did, and then I went away with 20s, and then COVID happened.
Yeah.
And then squad sizes got dropped, and then suddenly I was needed in training more, and then you kind of broke into the team.
Of course, yeah. Squad sizes dropped because of the cap. Tell me about Bucks, because I always find it really interesting. There's this league in the UK, well, England essentially, which is just super competitive and nobody watches it.
Yeah. They don't really put it out there that much. They only film like one game every fortnight. And, you know, you won't always say it's the best rugby to watch because it's a Wednesday night. It's flipping wet, rainy, cold. But it's really hard when you're there because coming into the league as a fresher, so you're 18, you're playing against people that are, you know, 23 and above.
Yeah.
And everyone's big because it's the uni lifestyle.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I guess being a pro as you are now, you don't quite... Yeah, it must be a difficult sort of position you're in because you don't get to enjoy the uni lifestyle as much as you could do, I guess.
No. I mean, I made a big point of it. I always said, so last season, I wasn't, especially at the start, I wasn't that professional because I said when I broke through, I was still like going with the uni lifestyle. And yeah. I was thinking to myself, oh, sick. Like I can do both. Like I could still go out, you know, a couple of times. But as the season went on and you start realizing how long the season is, it kind of went away. Me and my friends, being the third years now, 21, we kind of just stopped going out midweek, really.
I'm not surprised. So in your mind, do you think you were always going to play for Bath? Was that from being, I don't know, 15, 16, you always thought, yeah, I'll probably end up being a professional rugby player? Or is this a relatively recent thing as you've got better?
I had quite a like, weird journey. So I played 8 until year 11. Uh-huh. And I was, you know, I was decent, but I was just ball skills. So I was just chucking miss passes from 8.
Yeah.
And then I got moved to 12 for the under 17 season. So like the first year of 18s league with Bath, and I didn't know how to defend set piece. So I got rinsed, mate, like probably played myself out of a contract and got dropped from the team and everything. And that was tough, to be honest. Like, that was the first time I've had a real blip. And then for the 18 season, I just put a load of work in and then managed to find my niche, really.
I'm astonished. So you weren't actually a centre when, well, what, from like 17?
No, yeah. So I kind of moved from 8. It's quite an easy switch around. Like my coach, Craig Lilly, who's now my ACAB manager, moved me. And he said, essentially, it's exactly the same, but we want the ball in your hands more, which I love. So
yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, because I mean, I've heard of lots of players going from the ball handling positions. I mean, I'll give you an example. Josh Beaumont played 10, I think, when he was back at Fylde and then moved over to second row. The other one is it Flamant or however you say his name? The old Wasps second row who plays 7 for France. He was left. He was 10 at Loughborough. Well, really? 13, yeah,
and 10. Same with like Alfie. Alfie was playing centre at school, wasn't he?
That's right, yeah. Outside centre. Yeah, so I've heard it going that way, but I don't think I've heard it going the other way that often.
Yeah, I don't know. I had a bit of a unique game style. Like, I really enjoyed stepping people, and I really enjoyed passing it. And 8, you know, back then, you don't really run strike moves, so it's just like pick and go, do your thing. Like, look for the ball. There's no real structure.
That's really interesting, because when I watch you play, well, there's two things that I thought when I first saw you play, and... The reason I thought this is because I started watching rugby, like properly watching rugby, about 20 years ago. The first season I really focused on was when Northampton won their first European Cup. So it's about 20 years ago. So I didn't quite catch the end of your dad's career. So when I watched you play, I thought you must have a rugby league background. And mm-hmm. you must also have played centre basically your entire life.
Yeah. That leaguey kind of feel was a lot of my inspiration came from Carl Eastman.
You can tell.
That was when I first came through. Because I was never like big. I was only fat because I looked at Manu and wanted to be like him. So I just ate loads when I was 18 and then was huge when I came in. but I always looked at Carl and I just loved how jinky he was in his ball playing. And my ball playing is nowhere near his, but that's always what I aspire to be, like a hybrid between him and JJ.
Did you manage to train much with Kyle Eastman when he was at Bath?
No, that I think I watched him in my last year at school and then he left.
Yeah.
And then when I came in, I had Josh Matavesi and Jax Willison.
Yeah, now Josh Matavesi is actually a mix somewhere between Kyle Eastman, Dan Manu, to Alangi. There is a continuum of players, and he's right in the middle there.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, Kyle Eastman's a really interesting player. I've never interviewed him. I wish I had. But there's two players who, when I ask, you know, who was the best player that you've ever played with, two names always come up. Or against. Ben Moon. All tight heads say Ben Moon is an excellent loose head.
Really?
Yeah, and the other one is Kyle Eastman. Rob Webber said it. Carl Ferns said it. Nathan Catt said it. Said, you know, this guy is the best guy that we've ever played with. And for all his skills and whatnot, it turns out that what they loved about him is the way he talks to them, the way he puts them into holes, tells them what to do. I think that's hell of a skill.
Yeah. It's underrated. I used to say to people that were coming to watch me or were scouting me, I used to say, like, you need to be at the game to understand what I'm doing, because you'll be able to hear me when you're next to the pitch. On TV, you don't hear anything. Like, we've got such a vocal back line when, like, all the backs at Bath are vocal, and we very much, like, run second receiver calls the plays.
Yes.
And if you think about your 10... Your 10's always watching the ball coming from 9, so he can't really watch what's outside him.
Yeah.
So as a 12 or second receiver, if you tell the 10, all he has to do is catch and pass.
Yes, exactly. We were having this conversation on Egg Chasers on maybe this week or maybe last week. Like, how do people go about that? Because obviously England have got Owen and George, Owen Farrell, Marcus Smith as it is now, that 10-12. And I actually don't think it works that well just having... two tens. I think it's better if you've got like an Esterhazen type, because, you know, eventually you might want to run.
Yeah. It's weird. It's really weird. I've played 10 before. When you don't have a vocal 12, it ruins you.
Yeah.
If you don't have a vocal 12, you almost need your Manu or Esterhazen type 12. I've never been at camp with Faz, but from what I've seen, he talks the most out of anyone.
Yeah.
And you got to remember, like, it takes time to build a 10-12 partnership. And Marcus and Owen are only doing it at camp or when they're playing. So the time frame to actually build those connections is so small.
Yeah. Who do you think brings out the best in you when you're playing for Bath?
Probably JJ. It's weird. So attack, you can almost just leave me out there. I feel comfortable in attack. It's more in defense. When I've got JJ outside me, I know he's always going to make the right decision.
Yes.
So I will be the loose end. So basically I'm saying to myself, okay, don't fuck up here, then I'll be sweet. And then in attack, there's nothing better than having a 12 and a 13 that can play both roles. Because if the ball, pisses off to the right side of the field and I'm on the left side, I know JJ will go second receiver and I don't have to worry.
Okay.
In the wide channel. So it makes you a lot more efficient and you can scan a lot more.
That's interesting. Yeah, because you've got so much talent in the centres now, because, we've spoke about JJ. Obviously, you've got your set of skills. You've also got Cam Redpath in the mix, and he can do the occasional thing here and there.
Occasionally, mate. Cam's fucking mint. I had him outside me when we played Quince, and that was like my first game at 10, his first game at 12 outside me.
Now, was that one of the few games this year you won was with you at 10, was it not?
The best day of my life.
Was it?
The best day of my life.
Tell me more.
It was just like almost like the disrespect for us coming into the game. You know, you got me at 10, you got Cam coming back. We've lost so many games. You're playing against the champs at home, on a Friday night, and Bath's bumping. And then to turn around and win it, my days.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good, isn't it? I guess, and I know you've got to tread carefully here, but it's been a difficult year at Bath. And I think short term, everyone might be a little bit miserable about where you've ended up this season. I think long term, though, you can't help but look at that squad and think, yeah, okay. You only need a few things to go right, I think, in order to make huge progress.
Yeah, yeah. And, one of those small things we said was, as a team, if you just win your home games, I know it's easier said than done. If you win your home games, you're top six.
Yeah.
So you know, and actually, if you look at not our results, but how we've played, like we were better at home last season. And, if you can win all your games bar two, and then you'll pick up your away wins, here and there, you'll actually be sweet come the end of the season.
Yeah. How did you prepare differently for playing 10 rather than 12? Is there any difference, or did you actually have to do other things?
I found it a lot more stressful. I'm so relaxed when I'm playing. Like you can see, that's why I'm chucking miss passes, touch and stuff. But when I was playing 10, you're thinking the whole time, okay, they're box kicking to us. Watch horse catch it. does horse make ground? No. All right, set up for the kick straight away. Okay, are we playing in the right areas of the field? I've got to sit in backfield in defense, like little things like that.
Of course, yeah.
So when we finished the game, I had a headache because I just didn't even want to celebrate because I was so fried.
Yeah. How was your analysis session after that? Was it generally quite positive with everything that you'd done? And also, that's another thing which I kind of think, which is maybe someone with your sort of talents is better off at 12, just so you can relax and, you know, pull the strings and do the necessary stuff. And maybe someone with a little bit more discipline, a kind of, I can't think really, like a Dan Bigger type, just does need to sit at 10. So he can do all that boring stuff. Or maybe everyone just needs to forget themselves a little bit and play a bit more naturally. I don't know what the right answer is, actually.
You get a big mix. So I personally, from previous experiences, I find it easier playing with an orthodox 10. When I say orthodox, I mean like your up and down pass kick.
Yeah.
And I find Orlando, Priestland, like those guys, they've been perfect for me. It's when I went to camp for the first time, and I was playing with Marcus and Jacob Umanga, and those guys are like a lot more, you know, they do a lot more of the playmaking for their teams. So when I'm there, it's almost like I don't really know what to say because we're not on the same wavelength.
Yeah, and I think backlines are fascinating because this is a point that England have, I guess, which is loads of talent, loads of playmakers. But I think at some point you do need somebody to go forward.
Yeah.
You do need someone to catch the ball and just run. I mean, in your team, who would that be? I mean, Horse would be Will Muir would be a great example.
Or Joe, like someone like that.
Yeah, just go forward.
Yeah. And, you know, that is kind of where you could say we'd come apart as a team. It was good because we had Clarkey last season. He's actually quite big.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're saying our centres of me, JJ, Cam and Max Wright, we're not huge. You've got Will Butt, who's played on the wing a bit, but we're not huge. So we do rely on, you know, our precision off our strike moves and our forward pack quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you can tell that because the Bath pack is, again, full of big names, very, very good, but you do rely on them quite a lot. I think when Bath play, they try and play with almost too much intensity. And I think when that intensity sort of dies down, they struggle for what's our plan B?
Yeah. Yeah, it was tough. So I remember at the start of the season, it was really tough because it was like, if we dropped a ball, it was essentially a scrum penalty to them.
Yeah.
And you know, games where your lineout's faltering. So, you know, set piece is so important for us. And that was tough at times. So as backs, we were almost trying too hard to force something. And then you drop a ball and then it's a scrum. Your forwards are getting knackered, you know, and then you start getting beaten around the park.
Yeah. How much of winning do you think in the Premiership? Because I look at all the Premiership teams now, and broadly speaking, when everyone's got their first 15 out, there's not much to choose between the worst team and the best team. In fact, actually, we'll use yourselves this year. Bath's first 15 is not much worse than Leicester's first 15. In fact, you might argue that there's hardly anything in it. So how much of winning do you think in the Premiership is just mindset and getting into the habits of winning?
It's interesting you say this. So someone actually came to me when we were losing loads of games and they said, winning is just as much of a mindset as losing is.
Yeah.
And it is so hard to get out of it. And I bet when you're winning, like I always used to say, if Leicester's team, it must be flipping easy. You rock up to training. Everyone's on it from go. You know, everyone's excited. You don't really have to turn anything around. You don't have to make too many changes.
Yeah, completely agree. I think it's almost like when you're winning, when you're losing, you forget how hard winning is. And when you're winning, it doesn't feel that hard at all. The things which feel really difficult when you're losing become very, very easy. It's hard to explain. It's like a momentum thing, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, it is a league of such fine margins. Like this year, especially playing, made me realise how much, you know, discipline, especially in terms of cards. Like when you go down to 14 men, you're getting killed. Like,
yes. Stuff
like that really ruins you. Like, it ruins you. Those 10 minutes really get you.
Yeah. Just change the subject a bit. Have you met Johan Gran yet? Is he knocking about Bath?
No, I actually haven't. He's only... because obviously he had his ties with Munster.
Yeah.
So a lot of his work was being done through Ed Griffiths, which is another story.
Oh, yeah. That's let's shelve that for another time.
And then with Johan, I think... I'm pretty sure he's just moved to Bath. I don't know about the other coaches, but I know he's moved to Bath. We've got all our S&C plans. We come back into preseason on the 11th, and then I think it'll be all things go.
I see. So are you starting the preseason on Sunday? On Monday, that'll be.
Yeah.
Yeah. You should take him like a little hamper of food round. Make sure he's moved in well.
Mate, trust me. That's what I tried to do last year. So I was at camp the whole time, so I missed 5 weeks of preseason.
Yeah.
So I was like, even in those 5 weeks, I'm still coming in. Do you want to have a meeting?
Just, exactly.
Like, don't forget me, like, kind of job.
So have any of the boys heard from Van Gran yet? Is he doing Zoom calls? Is there anything happening, or is it all?
Yeah. I think a lot of the, we say senior players, so that's your JJs, your McAnally's, the older first team of lads. Like, a lot of them have been in chats with him, talking about what has worked well. Because you got to remember the young boys, say me and Orlando, our perspective is so narrow because we've only had one coach. So no matter who comes in, chances are we're probably going to say they're good.
Yeah.
Never know a bad coach because we, you know.
Oh, that's a great point, isn't it? That's a really good point. Because being a pro, your coach has been, and not to disparage these guys, but you've probably only had Neil Hatley, whoever else is at Bath at the time. Who was attack coach last year? You had?
Dave Wilson.
That's right, yeah. So you've only had like a hand.
Not Wilson, my bad. Yeah, Dave.
I thought you had someone with a rugby league background, though. I don't know why I thought that.
No, we didn't.
Well, let's just skip past that. But it is an interesting point because, of course, you wouldn't have had that many coaches. Who did you deal with in age grade at England?
Who do I have? I had Dicko, Alan Dickinson.
Dickinson.
Yeah. Is he a league background? I know he came from Saints.
Yeah, so he came from Saints. I don't know if he is league background, but they had... Yeah. Dickinson, I always thought he looked a lot like Malinder, and he looked a lot like King, and they all sort of have a pretty ubiquitous look.
Yeah, and he's a very good coach. I can see him staying with the 20s for a while. I love having new coaches, just experiencing new coaches, new 10s, like different things, because you can almost get more of a holistic image for the game.
Yeah, so one of the lads at Sale this year... has been offered on the off season, like just to develop his game. One of the younger boys has been, I think he's gone off to Australia to one of the NRL teams, which I think is a really cool way to.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who it was.
I think it's Rafi. I think I might be talking out of turn there because he asked, "Can I develop myself over the summer?" And go to Wigan. He's like, "Nah, I'd rather go to the NRL."
Yeah.
I think he's gone, but don't take that as gospel. But I think that's an awesome way just to see a new environment, learn a few new tricks. It'd be great.
Yeah, look at Joe Marchant.
Yeah, he's spent a year
in New Zealand. That's something I'd love to do. Also, I'm half, my mum's Kiwi, so over this couple of years. Yeah, but I'd love to go across just to experience it. I've kind of timed it terribly because you can't play 20 games for Bath and then go and play another, 10 games in summer to end of the season.
Do you know, funnily enough, the salary cap might work in your favour now because obviously wages are getting compressed. And yeah, I think for a lot of lads now, they're not earning what they thought they'd be earning. Say if you were coming into professional rugby pre-COVID, I think you'd be expecting a lot more money than potentially what is on the table now. And, that goes for everyone. But in a way, I think that really works into young players' hands because they can actually afford now to go over to France or go over to New Zealand or wherever it is, even if it's just for a year. And there's a very weird phenomena in English rugby, which is the further away you are from English rugby, the better people think you are.
Yeah, because they don't see they only see the highlights.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, I'm not making a judgment on these players whatsoever, but Piers Francis came back from the Blues like he was, the second Dan Carter. Matt Simons, he came back with a massive, massively enhanced reputation. Who else is there? Oh, your boy Zach Mercer just got man of the match in the top 14 final. Mm-hmm. They'll be clamoring for him back.
I'll give it to Zach. I think Zach's is the most impressive because everybody knows how good the French clubs are. But it's actually quite weird how well he's done. Like, really weird.
Yeah, I think he might have done well because he breaks the mould. So if you think about how massive that Montpellier pack is, if you have someone like Zach who's, when they're all zigging, he's zagging, I think that could be quite effective,
Exactly, and it worked. It just played so well. Like they worked so well as a team. Yeah, I feel like because we don't do any like intercontinental club games, so we never play, you never play anyone from, you know, Europe, apart from the South African teams now. But, you know, Saracens were meant to play the Crusaders, was it? And then it got cancelled.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's so right.
That would have been class, just to see, right, you always wonder, so would Saracens Structure Plus game beat, you know, the Crusaders playing, you know, playing out their 22?
What do you think? Where do you stand on this debate?
I just, you know, in open play, I think, you know, you can, it's easier to defend than it is to break someone down, if that makes sense. I think Sarri's defense is so simplistic, they would do well.
Yeah.
I think, therefore, it just goes to the set piece. And I do think Northern Hemisphere teams, apart from, you know, South Africa, I think Northern Hemisphere teams have better set pieces than Southern Hemisphere. So I would expect Sarri to just do exactly what they did in the final with Leicester, just kick over and over, let them make the mistakes, and then slowly work their way up the field.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for structure. I'm all for grinding people down structure. And if you want to put in a bit of Stardust on top of that, by all means do so. But I think first and foremost, you've got to get your nuts and bolts nailed down. Otherwise, you know, what are we all doing here?
Exactly, exactly. And it's such a boring thing to watch. But, and, you know, rugby is a purist game, but it does get results.
It does. But I also think for players like you to exist, you have to have players like Josh McNally existing. Otherwise, nothing works. And that's what I love about rugby union, which is, I mean, again, not that I'm saying he doesn't necessarily want the ball, but it is probably best that we have a load of players that don't want the ball and just want to hit rucks and do the things which nobody else wants to do.
Exactly. And you'll see, that's why it's almost like the era of DORs that are stat merchants are coming through. So from what I've heard, you know, Rob Baxter, Borthwick, both of them are huge on their stats. So when they come to starting players in the off-season, you look at a player they've signed, you'd be like, what? Like, does that really add to the team? But they already know exactly what he's going to bring. It's a bit like Moneyball.
Yeah, very much so. Rob Baxter's fascinating. I got on the wrong side of Rob Baxter, actually, over a beer. And he can be quite sharp, as well when he wants to be. As in, quite cutting. But he does all his own video analysis. Like, yeah, I go to, say, Sale, and they've got a video analysis team. Well, Rob Baxter is the guy that does it at Exeter. And what I understand is one of the things he looks for, apparently, is movement patterns. And I don't know what that means, and he won't tell anyone what that means. But movement patterns are the thing which they look for when they're trying to sign players, which I think is fascinating.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I suppose it kind of makes sense, especially if he's talking about movement patterns on the ball. So if you look at Exeter, a lot of their, they run a lot of drift attack.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of overs, a lot of stuff that if I ran when I was in age group, I'd be dropped for, you know, running across the pitch.
Oh, okay. Interesting. You sound like you do quite a lot of analysis.
I don't. I'm just a bit of a nose, to be honest. I really enjoy watching the game. Like, I love watching different styles. And I think it's, you know, it's, the game's quite methodical.
So if someone was to come to you, say Johan comes to you and says, look, I've seen all of last year's tape. The old guys are great, but, you know, we're going to turn it over to the young guys. That's where the future is. How should we play rugby? What are you going to tell him?
With our players? With our backline?
Just in general. You know, we're going to build the team how you want it, Max. What do you want to do? How are we going to win?
Just give me a huge pack, a kicking 9 and a kicking 10, and then you can pretty much pick whoever you want outside of that. Look at Leicester.
Yeah.
You know, they got, like, I think they have the highest kicking meters in the league this year, and it, you know, it showed because they won. If you've got a massive pack, you win your lineouts, you win your scrums, you've got a 10 that kicks when he needs to kick, you can almost choose then, do you want a defensive back line or do you want an attacking back line that will, you know, work it when you get go forward?
Yeah, and if you've got someone like JJ, you pretty much have both.
Exactly.
Yeah. You've been in England camp, right?
Yeah.
Now, I've spoke to other players in England camp, and it's sort of like a varied kind of, they have varied opinions, but I think one of the things which comes through is just the intensity. How did you find it?
So I've been at summer series twice now. I did the whole thing last summer, and it was nuts, like nuts. Coming from two Prem games or something, going into that training session, and, you know, you're just you're not getting run into the ground, but it is so intense. I said to my dad, it's a bit like X Factor. You're really trying to perform so that you get picked the next week.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I would not be surprised if that has actually ended some international careers, because there is so much pressure on that training session. Some guys come in for a week or two and they're never seen again.
Yeah, and it's not even physical side of the rugby. It's the little things like you don't want to be that one guy meeting. So I'm, especially in COVID, can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry, you just dropped off. Can you start answering that again? Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. I was saying it's more of the mental side rather than physical. Like the physical side kind of looks after itself because everyone's conditioned. It's the, you know, you're in a room by yourself. You don't want to be that one person that's late to a meeting. So I found myself sleeping because I was knackered, waking up at 5, like in a cold sweat, checking my phone, like, fuck, you know, if I missed anything. No, all right, I'm just going to stay awake now and get ready so that I don't miss anything.
And how did you find Eddie? I mean, have you experienced any of the mind games? Is he?
Yeah, I think he's one of the, well, obviously I don't have much to compare to, but I think he's one of the best coaches in the world in terms of figuring out what makes a player tick.
Yeah.
Because I've always been, I feel like if someone addresses me wrong, it's very easy for me to go like, right, fuck, I don't want to do this anymore. Like he toyed around a bit with it for the first 3 days, and then like we kind of clicked, and then from there he's just been really good at pushing me.
Yeah. So from an outsider looking in, I've only met Eddie. I think I've met him twice, and you know you don't really get a sense of what he's like as a man manager. But from the reports, it almost sounds like he creates this sense of chaos to test people, and it's a sense of chaos which, you know, and uncertainty which makes people work harder and drive harder because they're just not entirely comfortable.
Yeah, there's definitely uncertainty, and once you kind of figure that out, it almost like spurs you on more. So an example would be from going from last summer series into the first like 5 Prem games before the Autumn Internationals. I remember we played Bristol, and you know, we hadn't really spoken since because I hadn't done anything. And then we played Bristol. I played well. He messaged me saying, like, oh, yeah, really well played. Keep it going. And then from there, I was like, oh, here we go. I could see myself playing against South Africa or at least getting into camp. And then, you know, we go to the next week. We play Saris. We're all on a high and we get binned, like 71-10 or whatever it is, binned. And then the squad comes out. I'm not in the WhatsApp group. Fuck, okay. Right, here we go again. And then it almost like just keeps pushing you on. You ask him why, you know, you always want to find out what, you know, what you could have done. And he knows, to be fair, he sees so much more than meets the eye.
I don't think he gives players honest answers about how they can improve. I know that sounds conspiratorial, but I don't think he wants you to know what he thinks. I think he just wants you to find it out. That I honestly think that.
I don't know, because I feel like as a player, you just, unless you are really stupid, you do know what you need
to learn. Exactly.
Like you just do know. And a lot of times you'll hate it. You know, when you're at any kind of training and you get that, you know, that one nose that's asking something for the sake of it, you don't want to be that guy. A lot of times when I've asked him, it's almost like for closure. So I know exactly what I want to go and do.
Yes.
In reality, I know exactly what he's going to say.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of times I've asked lads, you know, what you'll work on, to say, be more consistent. It's like, come on, grow up. Be more consistent. Like, what does that mean?
Doesn't work. I feel like a lot of players know. And it's not like Eddie's the only coach that can see people's work on. It's like your DOR should be able to tell you anyway.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Do you know the phrase I hate? And I think it must have started high up and it's worked its way down to club rugby. Make right decisions. I'm like, come off it. That can't be your advice. Make right decisions. What, do you think I wanted to make wrong decisions?
Yeah, I wish it was that flipping easy.
Yeah, like if only there was a process I could go through to make right decisions in my entire life, I would do that. But it's just simply not a thing. It's not a thing you can do, particularly not when you're playing sport.
Exactly, and because people start saying it, because that saying goes along. I went for a period in the season where my playmaking was just terrible. You know, when you're running like that shape where you have a hard line and someone out the back,
yeah,
and you make a decision on whether the defender bites or not. I was making the wrong decision every time. And it's almost like knocking my confidence because I'm overthinking it.
Yes.
And in reality, I've only seen like 3, 4, 5 players in the flesh that can take it to the line, see exactly what the defender's doing in slow motion and make the decision. And I'll give it to him. Sips is probably the best player I've ever seen do it.
He is incredible.
When he's been telling me stuff, mate, I've never said it to him, but he's been telling me stuff. And I've turned around and I've gone, I'm just not good enough to do that. Like, not yet. Like, it's nuts. I think it's a talent. I think it's God's gift. It's something you can work on, but it's the same as if I go and work on my sprint every day, I'm never going to be as fast as Usain Bolt. I think there are some players that are just naturally gifted at seeing things at the right time.
I do think, though, particularly with skills, and I hate saying this because I think skills are so overrated in rugby. I think you can do them or you can't do them. And it's not they're overrated, but I think some coaches hang their hat on we are a skillful team and it's at the expense of everything else. So they're very important, but they're not that important that everything else needs to be binned. And I'm not talking from a professional level here. I'm talking more... club rugby, where this is getting more and more prevalent. But I think they do, all of a sudden, something does just click. Like, you get used to the pace of the game or the timing of the pass, and all of a sudden, it's kind of like you were saying when you first trained with the England boys, like Marcus and whatnot. It just takes a little bit of time to click and gel.
Yeah, 100%. And you actually need, like, similar skill levels across the board to push each other quicker. So someone like Northampton, I think, especially, you know, when they're on their game, they dictate the tempo. So they choose the tempo that they play at. And that means that, you know, their timing of the pass, their set piece is so hard to defend. So, you know, in reality, I won't name drop him, but they should have beaten Leicester. They left 3 tries out there.
They did, didn't they? They did.
You know, and that, I mean, if anyone was going to do it, they were going to be Leicester at the time. I think if you watch them play, they're incredibly hard to defend against. And they just breed skillful players and they bring in skillful players. Look at Tommy Freeman. Didn't play. He was my 20s year. I think he might have only played 1 game for 20s or didn't play.
Oh, really?
And then I see him in the Prem squads. I'm like, what? Really?
Yeah.
Really? And then I watch him play and this guy's timing at the line is immaculate.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. You can't coach it. And it's quite hard to see unless you're training someone in the right way.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, Northampton are a funny one because on their day, they're very good, but their days seem to be kind of in the summer months. And, you know, they can get beaten up. I've never heard anyone describe their set pieces as scary. And I don't think their set pieces is scary, but I think their plays off set piece are quite scary. Like, some of their set pieces, woeful, frankly. But their plays off set piece are great.
Their plays off it, yeah. Their plays off it are great. So if you can almost, you know, void their line out and scrum, then, you know, you're in with a chance around the field. Because I think, who was it? Actually, I think it was Eddie. Eddie said at the start of this summer series, he said, I think it was like 70% of tries or 75% of tries are scored in the first 4 phases.
It's all right.
So, yeah, something crazy like that. So, if you know, that's why you see a lot of teams now, Northampton's one of them, where they'll do like 2-3 phase moves.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if that is because, I'm making this up by the way, I'm completely making this up. But I wonder if that's 4 phases because a lot of it is from turnover ball. So you turn it over through 2 or 3 phases before you break them down completely rather than, because I always think of like, you've got to go through 12 phases or, you know, be old school Exeter or something.
That's
before
how
you
it
score.
Used to be, yeah. That's how it used to be. It kind of, what took it away from the game was the that rule change, the flying wedge. Like, Exeter did it really well in the opposition 22.
Yeah.
Where you get 3 players around the ball, everyone bind up. It's like a small mall.
It's a travesty, that was.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's made the game a lot more interesting. But you see now, everything's off. You have a crack-off kick return. You maybe have a go for 2 phases, and then you kick back, give them a chance. You don't really see too many teams now going, you know, 20-plus phases because you just get knackered. Look at Bristol. Bristol at the start of the season. Oh, my gosh. I feel for them in preseason because they were going wide to wide.
Yeah, they were.
And in the first season, it worked really well. No one knew how to defend it, but teams started going, okay, so we'll push up slightly. We'll let them play behind the line. And then we'll just drift off and get them on the edge. And then they'll just keep going side to side. And some, you know, they're going to get tired or drop the ball.
Yeah, I love that bit of analysis there because it just shows how quickly the Premiership develops. What they were great at, they were so good at finding the edge of your defence. But if you just let them play in front of you, they've effectively got nothing. They're going to have to reinvent themselves.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, they've already got that starting game plan, and then you try and build on it.
Yeah, and I think it's also an example of a coach getting, having a system but not being able to adapt that system. So everyone's adapted to them. I don't think that they've kicked on with that style to take it to the next place that it needs to be.
Yeah, but then again, they won the Challenge Cup. They came first in the league or second in the league, should have beaten Quins but didn't, and then bombed out in the semis. You take that first season and you go into pre-season, you can't be like, oh, well, Sarri's going to know how we're going to play next season.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to know how to defend us. So, you know, and once the season started, you can't make changes midway through. Like, I mean, look at Bath. You know, you see the changes are so minute. Everything is made in pre-season.
Yeah, so I've always thought, and this is a little bit frivolous with clubs' money, but I've always thought they should employ two sets of coaches. So the first set of coaches should look at what happened last year and formulate a game plan. And then the next set of coaches should get the game plan that the first set of coaches formulated and formulate the game plan to combat that. And the reason is because everybody is going to be working on the game plan to combat last year. So you've got to be 2 years ahead in order to be ahead of the game. Everyone ends up playing the same game plan because they've got the same stats.
Exactly. And then you see, like, it's the teams that innovate first that will either boom or bust. So when Quins won, not the most recent Prem, but their Prem before it, they changed up their game plan. They started throwing it around a bit. No one knew how to defend it. That season where Bath got to the finals against Sarri's, we were running like a 2-4-2 forward pod formation.
Oh, okay,
can't get my head around, you know, that with 40 Carl and JJ pulling the strings. And then we get to the next season and we're finishing 10th because everyone knows how, everyone like figures it out.
Yeah, and not only that, if you see a really nice move in the Premiership 1 week, you can guarantee everyone's doing it next week. Everyone wants to give it a go.
Without a doubt. You watch, like, if me and Orlando are watching a game and you see a cool play, or you watch anything from the Southern Hemisphere, you'll turn around like,
give that a go.
Next thing you know, both us and the opposition team are running the same flip and move.
yeah, exactly right. Just back to your thing about the extended phases. Do you know who I always think of who love extended phases? It's Saracens. Like, they don't necessarily want to take like a 15 phase defensive set on their own 5 metre, but they will take it and they enjoy it so much.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to play extended phases, there's certain teams you just do not want to play against.
They live off it because they'll get one big shot, two big shot, three big shot. Next thing you know, when I was playing 10 against them, horrible day, you're suddenly thinking, right, so I can't kick it because we're in their 22. I don't want to just pull a crossfield kick out for the sake of it. So do I just continue rinsing my forwards around the corner, or do I try and run it as a back line and then get pushed back 10 metres?
Yeah, you. I mean, on TV, you feel them getting stronger. It's incredible. And they did it in the semi-finals against Quins. You'd think that Quins are going to score. And, yeah, like I say, one big hit, two big hits. And before you know it, they're all high-fiving each other. Like, exactly. Okay, that's game over now.
Exactly. And the Allianz is a, you know, it looks terrible, but it's a fortress. It's a horrible place to play.
Did you say that you played 10 against Saracens?
Yeah, so we beat Quins, and then Landy was still injured. So I then played 10 against Sarri's, and my days, it was a long day. It was, mate, we went into, it was like the 35th minute, it was 9-3 to them. And then suddenly we give away two pens, they score two mauls before half time, and then end up beating us like 40-3.
Yeah, because there's that one, and there's the other one at the Rec, which of course must rank as one of the worst days in Bath history, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got to remember perspective. I don't have much to compare it to, but I think it's more the fact that we'd gone a whole new game plan for the season. We went out to Sale, should have beaten them.
No, you should have. I was there for that. Or was I? Just trying to think of if I was there for that game. No, I was there for the lockdown game. No, different game.
Yeah, and then we went Newcastle at home. I mean, we just played terribly, but we knew that. And then we played Bristol, and we were unreal against Bristol. It was like everything had come together. Everyone's like, the refs come in at the end of the game and said to us, oh, sorry, we've cost you two tries there. So we knew we should have won.
Okay.
And then going into Saris, I normally have a good feel, and I thought, okay, we should beat these guys, and they've come out and just Saracened us, really.
Yeah. So, being where you are in your career, being so young, I mean, you must feel now, yeah, okay, bad season, shake it off because you've got the rest of your career to go. Having said that, there must have been some really dark days this season, particularly for the older guys.
Oh yeah, I bet. Especially the ones that are from Bath through and through, because they'd have never, someone like Dunny, never have seen anything. Oh, you got me?
Yeah. Just about.
Okay. I haven't. Yeah, someone like Dunny would never have seen dark days like this, and then we've gone and, you know, had 60-point losses on 4 or 5 occasions this season.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think about Anthony Watson, and he was brought to Bath to win trophies. There's no two ways about it. And, you know, arguably he should have at least have one premiership underneath his belt now. Yeah. And it's just a shame, really, for the guys, because I think the Bath team you've got now is very good, very, very good. I think about, 7 years ago, just pre-Sam Burgess, it might have been the best team in the country. And it just didn't quite get there.
Yeah, and, you know, it shows in that final, you can... Just side note, Saris were breaching the salary cap.
There you go.
Someone only brought this up to me the other day, and it kind of broke me, because I started realising, like, shit, someone like JJ, when they actually find that out, they were the silver medalist. That would have been their premiership, and that would have been, you know, their one premiership.
Well, I mean, you ask Harlequins what they think about, you know, the Saracens cap breaches internally, and, you know, they're horrified by it. You know, I actually think that, what's his name? The old coach from Quins, not Gustard, the one before that, who's at the RFU now. What was his name? Come back to me. Conor O'Shea. I'm pretty sure Conor O'Shea was quoted as saying, you know, one of the reasons that he left is, well, we can't compete. You know, they've got this squad, we've got this, you know, and we stick to the rules. Well, what's the point? So, yeah, there are some hard feelings there.
Yeah. But to be fair, none of the boys are really too salty about it. But, sorry, continuing, you see, like, we were playing great rugby, you know, 2-4-2 forward pack, forward pods, never been seen before. We've beaten Leicester by, you know, 40-odd points in the semis, and you get to Saris in the final, and they just do their normal thing. They just kick.
They
break you down, end up winning. They got players that know how to win big games.
Yeah, because I remember they started Sam Burgess at 6 that game, and I think you could have done with a bruiser like Carl Ferns, actually, just beating people up. That's exactly what you needed, but one of those things, it happens. Mm. It happens. Now, you know, you've always been a Bath lad. I assume that you're a Bath fan, which is great. So you're playing at the team that you support. But looking at the wide world of rugby, are there any sort of milestones that you would like to achieve elsewhere? Because I always think, if I was ever good enough to play rugby, I would love to play at Bath, because I think that's one of the world's great clubs. But then somewhere like Toulouse kind of takes my fancy, or maybe somewhere in South Africa. What are you thinking?
I try and be as level-headed as possible, like, without letting...
You don't need to be. You're one of the most talented players in the Premiership. You can do what you want.
Just like with my decisions. With my decisions, obviously, I'd like to play for England, or I'd like to be recognised as one of the best 12s, you know, in England at the time.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how many caps that would conjure me, but we'll go from there. If I got to the point where I'm unlikely to play, or I don't see myself in the fold... And I don't think we're building towards anything at Bath. I'd love to try France. I'd love to. But look at Zach. He's gone over there, almost reinvented himself. I just feel like it's a different way to play. You can improve so much over there.
Are you a little bit worried though? And I worry about players in this regard, because I always think about the career and the money and all the rest of it. I sort of mentioned this tangentially before, but you're not worried that a lot of players are holding on for this England dream, playing in the Premiership, and actually they're probably just better off going elsewhere for a year and then coming back?
Yeah, it's changing up a bit, to be fair, with French clubs. So they, from what I've heard, they will tend to either go for experienced internationals or young players with good potential. It's almost like the middleman's being squeezed out again.
Yeah, it's brutal, isn't it?
You can find those over there in France. I feel like, as a player, you kind of know am I likely to play for England, or do I have a chance of playing for England within the next 4 years or within my next contract? So I feel like that's the question I'd ask myself at the end of these 2 years. And, you know, someone like, actually Marcus said this to me at camp. He said, when he was debating whether to re-sign at Quinns or not before they went and won the Prem, or maybe the season after, he was saying, I'm going to give it one more year and I'm going to observe what's going on around the world, see if we're building towards something.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think so many players have got their hopes on England, and if it doesn't come off and you've wasted 3 years of your career, well, if you're only playing 10 years, I mean, most players don't even play that. I just think, you know, go and do as much as you can, as early as you can. But don't listen to me. Do what you need to do.
No, mate. I agree. And, you know, fans will never want to hear this, but in reality, you don't make enough money from rugby to retire. No. And you literally never know when you may have to retire. So I may have to retire this year. You just don't know. So you ask yourself, if I was in the same situation but working another job where there's no external pressure, do you switch to another sector to, you know, I'll say it like this, but set up your family for generations? Look at Josh Matavesi. Hoops was really, really good with it, but Hoops let him go. Obviously, let me come into the team, but Hoops let him go because Josh had an opportunity that you can't really turn down.
No, I always say rugby is an amazing head start. You know, 21, it's an incredible head start, but that's all it is.
It's literally just a head start, because I look at my friends at uni and I'm thinking, okay, so I'm earning this much now. These guys are going into post-grad jobs. But when I retire at 35, if I have a degree, I'm starting at the bottom of the corporate ladder. So it's like, let's say like 30K. Those guys are 12 years into their corporate jobs. So you're talking like, my friends will then be earning, you know, around six figures for the rest of their lives, if they want to.
Yeah, and I think it's so important that young players appreciate this. I don't think they always do, because, look, if you gave me an academy contract when I was in university, I mean, compared to how I lived in university, I'd pretty much be a millionaire. I mean, there's no two other, you know, that's what it means.
Yeah, the money goes so far at uni, but it's all about after, and that's why you're seeing a lot more people. This is the first season where I've seen quite a few 18-year-olds turn down contracts from clubs. Or you see people coming out of uni with degrees and they're turning down contracts to go to a club because they know they'll be earning exactly the same in a corporate job. Then one, their body's not getting finished every week, and two, there's, you know, you got a 30-40 year career if they want it.
Now I'm going to ask you this, and it's completely separate to what we've just been talking about and kind of going back a little bit, but I just wanted to get this from you, because obviously you've only really just gone through the process. Can you just tell me about what your first appearance for the Bath first team was like?
Do you want to go? So obviously I had the London Irish game, but that was, we were down to like 12 men and I got 10 minutes.
your first start in the Premiership.
First start in the Prem was Sale, first game of the season this year. And I remember the team sheets come out and it's flipping Manu starting 12, Dupree at 10, I forget who was 13. And then they had Van Rensburg coming off the bench.
Yeah, they're meaty, aren't they?
Yeah. I think at that point, I didn't really have a grasp of the game and what I was coming up against. So I didn't really have much to be fearful of.
Yeah.
I actually really enjoyed it. I was just kind of running around, had a good preseason. I was off a massive high from going to summer series. I think the main thing was relief, really. Like, oh, finally, I've made my first Prem game. Like, it's fine. The counter stops now. I've done it at 20. Like, I don't have to worry anymore.
Yeah, exactly now, right.
How many more weeks can I keep doing this for?
Yeah, I can't imagine what an awesome feeling that must be. Particularly, I mean, that was the game at the Rec, yeah?
No, that was away at Sale.
Was it?
The week after was Newcastle at home. And that was, made Newcastle at home, running out of full Rec, and then we lost, but I got like the Paul Roger man of the match. So I played well for Bath. And, you know, hearing my name in the stands, like people are shouting my name, and it's nuts. It is nuts. It is literally what dreams are made of.
And how is your dad taking all of this? Because I guess he's kind of reliving his own career in a way.
Yeah, he takes it terribly. As I said earlier, like, and coaches will hate me for it, but I just don't really care that much when I'm playing.
Yeah.
I will do anything if I'm trying to win. So that's why you see some looseness. He almost takes all the nerves from me. He's the nervous one. He's the one messaging me loads before the game. He's the one that, you know, can't watch certain games because he's so worried about me and performing well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a father's worry is very different to a mother's worry. I bet he's all about, yeah, just win and do well rather than anything else.
Yeah, because he, like, to be fair, for a forward, he actually has a great knowledge of the game, which is
for a forward.
But no, for a number eight, playing back there,
yeah.
he knows a lot. Mum, on the other hand, is kind of, will pick the best bits I've had, even if I had a shocking game, would be like, yeah, that was sick. But with me and my dad, we're very much on the, you know, same wavelength. We both know when something's poor or not.
Yeah, has that actually been quite helpful, having someone who's actually been through? Because it's not, in my mind, playing for Bath is not really navigating professional rugby. It's navigating Bath, which is a completely different beast in of itself, because it's such a small town, it's such a rugby mad town. Someone has been through all that.
I mean, I love it. I love it. I don't know what other towns are like, but I can't really get enough of it, because the Bath fans almost elevate the young players that are through Bath so much that you just really want to play. Like someone like Miles Reed, that guy will never leave Bath rugby.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a great player as well.
So much. Like, there's so many players that just love the fans, love the city, and will do anything to win for them.
Yeah, I've got a feeling, you know, next year is going to be a lot better. I really hope it is.
I hope so. Almost like me, Orlando getting dropped from England early kind of works in Bath's favour. Cam being injured and not going on the summer tour with Scotland works in Bath's favour. And then JJ being around. So you've almost got all your 5-8s, your centres, everyone's there to do the whole 8 weeks.
And, if you were going to just, what is, in your mind, if there is one, what is that missing piece at Bath need?
I don't really know. I don't think we worked on our structure enough last pre-season. Look at our game, we go like five phases, and then suddenly it's like people are running like headless chickens.
Yes.
You know, I feel like once we've got a structure that we can stick to and be fine with that will essentially draw us a game, then you've got your, you know, your X factor players outside of that that will then push the game forward.
Excellent. Mate, we've been nattering here for an hour.
Yeah, I love rugby.
Perfect, mate. The amount of people that play rugby who do not like rugby is ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping it stays this way.
Yeah, well, I mean, the ultimate is Jamal Ford Robinson. Like, just doesn't really pay attention to anyone that plays rugby. He loves playing rugby, doesn't love watching rugby. Oh, loads of people. You ask, can I name drop? There's a very prominent England player. And if he's not playing, I say, hey, do you know how your club have done it this week? Oh, I've seen the WhatsApp, but that's it. Doesn't watch the game. Yeah. Couldn't care less.
Fair play. I feel like once you move away from your home club, it can get like that.
Oh, he plays for his home club. He's a home club great, but
I won't say anything else.
Excellent, mate. Are you a social media user much?
Yeah, I pay attention. I do enjoy having a look.
Do you want to give out your social media handle so everyone can find you?
Oh Christ! Okay, my Instagram's just Max Ojomo, and then my Twitter's Ojomo M. Pretty simple.
Simple, mate. Simple. Best of luck, and I'm sure when Bath do start winning games, you're going to be a major part of why they are winning.
I hope so, mate.
Definitely. Right, I will just save that, mate.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.